Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Be There in Five podcast. I'm Kate Kennedy, your host. Be There in Five is a long-form millennial zeitgeist and pop culture-focused podcast, and I appreciate you being here this week. And today we have a mashup of two series, kind of. One is Under the Influencer, where I interview influencers about their experience moving through the industry, especially those that have been in the game for a while and had to evolve. And this is a new category I've been taking on in the space of fitness and specifically having your own brand and clothing line related to activewear, but also Beth's in show, because this person happens to be a podcast listener, and I truly can't even believe it, but I knew I needed to have her on the show for this series. Our guest today is Cassie Ho. She is the creator behind Blogilates and the founder of PopFlex Active. I first was introduced to her with her Pop Pilates video, or videos on YouTube, where she would play pop music and teach you how to do Pilates when I was like way too intimidated to go into a studio, but wanted to understand it from the safety of my own home. And if you've been here a while, you guys know me and like fitness content. I'm so picky about how I'm motivated and what I'm drawn to. And there's a lot of, I don't know, garbage out there. And I think online fitness videos, and she was just so kind, so positive, not shamey, made it really accessible. And she was like one of the very few fitness influencers I followed back in the day when I was, you know, getting wedding ready and stuff like that. And you're ready as you are for your wedding. But at the time, I honestly was just trying to fit into this red jumpsuit for my rehearsal dinner that I got on a clearance rack that just like wasn't my size. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's healthy. I'm not saying you should do it. But during a time in my life when I was like, maybe I could be a little stronger and squeeze into my jumpsuit, I was doing a lot of her videos. And so when I found out years later that she was a podcast listener, I was like, wait, what? You were such a positive force in my life at one point when I dabbled in this arena. And her YouTube channel has garnered over a billion views. And she also founded a brand named PopFlex. And I love, love, love her stuff. She's been so generous, and I wear her jumpsuit all the time. I wear the jacket. I wear this like moto jacket all the time. I love her leggings. They kind of like dip into a V in the front, and they have pockets on the sides, which if you have a babe, you know, passy pockets are like everything. Yeah, I lived in her stuff while pregnant, and I still do. Also, one of the bags I took to the hospital when I gave birth was a PopFlex bag she had given me, and they make really huge water bottles, which I love too, especially in the going into labor context. And the nurse that escorted us out of the postpartum, like recovery area, saw the bag and she was like, oh my God, she looked like almost moved to tears telling me what Cassie means to her. And I was like, oh, like I know her. And she was like, what? Like, truly, I think that this, I've never seen someone light up in this way that I have any sort of affiliation with somebody that's, you know, meant so much to her over the years. And we just had a really sweet conversation. And I don't know, I love coming into contact with like other people's fans and seeing what they say about them and what they mean to them. And it was just like a very sweet moment. And yeah, aside from fangirling over her products and diving into the activewear creation and design process, Cassie and I dip into discussing the very volatile world of online fitness influencers. Health and fitness isn't my expertise, nor a category I really like featuring on the podcast, because it's tricky. It can be triggering. I don't even know if I always have resolved feelings in this category. And I know that there are a lot of predatory individuals that exist in this category of influence. So just a heads up, we do talk about like diet culture and body stuff a bit, with the goal of just having an honest conversation that, you know, we're not overly tiptoeing. But I was really interested to hear about her experience. On the one hand, this industry brought her the community that launched her brand to the next level. And on the other hand, it caused Cassie a great deal of her own hardships about how she views her body and her self-worth. And she talks about her body kind of becoming a billboard for her business. And just in that phrase, you can kind of see how complicated and potentially negative the effects can be on you. And I just thought her story was interesting, because when you think about health, fitness, body image, you know, all these things are so personal, and putting out on the internet is so incredibly vulnerable. And if you scroll the comments on a fitness influencer's page today, like you'll see the most bizarre, awful comments. And it's kind of something that, it's not a content category I participate a ton in online. So I maybe wasn't even realizing that it's like still can be that awful. But her Instagram is like such a joy, because she shows you the entire product design process and gets people's direct feedback and actually implements it and shows you later how like comments on Instagram changed how she developed or designed a product going forward. And I just think it's really, really fascinating. And I hope you find this conversation as interesting and enlightening and entertaining as I did. I'm not blowing smoke when I tell you that the thick band sweatpants I have worn every week of my life for the past 2 years. I love stuff with like a thick band that just hits in the right spot and holds me in ways that make me feel secure, like my own weighted swaddle. Because we recorded this a little while ago. We recorded this like back in Q4 2023. Yeah, because it was going to be my Q1 Under the Influencer app, but then it didn't come out till later Q1. So I don't know if she still has this jumpsuit. It's this wide leg jumpsuit with pockets and a scoop neck and long sleeves. And I still am wearing this all the time. I love it so, so much. But yeah, I think she really puts a lot of time and effort into maintaining the functionality and femininity of pieces that you can wear like to and from the gym or to and from a class or whatever that serve as activewear. But I wear them mostly as loungewear and like regular clothes outside of the house. Her activewear line is the closest to like regular clothes activewear gets, where I wear these on planes and when I'm out running errands and stuff. And I just feel like cute and comfortable and, I don't know, kind of like trendy, because I'm a little funny. I find sweats to be very hit or miss in terms of, does this outfit look intentional or does it look like I rolled out of bed? And they're like intentional comfort pieces. You know what I mean? Anyway, I'll let her speak for herself. Be sure to check out PopFlex and follow her on Instagram, because you can see this product development process and her sketches. And I just think it's genuinely interesting. Oh, and also tickets for we added two dates. Columbus is on May 2nd. Minneapolis is on May 5th. Two more live shows for the One in a Millennial book tour. It's going to be super fun. It's like the best ever. That's why I added more dates. I just wasn't done with it. And those are two places I haven't been yet. So I'm really excited to see some of my Midwest gals. So those tickets go on sale Monday 4/1. April 1st, Monday, 10 a.m. EST. Go to betherein5.com/live-shows. And I hope I get to see you. Please come out, because the problem is if I try out a city and then we don't sell a lot of tickets, then I kind of like can't go back because the promoters won't work with me. So if you're in Columbus or Minneapolis and you want me to come there for, I don't know, future shows, future books, future live pods, track fives, would love to see you show up. And I hope you enjoy this interview that we will get to right after these messages from our sponsors. Guys, I got my first mom chop this week. Pretty exciting stuff. I chopped off my hair like 5 or 6 inches. Big deal. And in combination with pros, I feel like it's all uphill from here with my hair care. You know when somebody asks you, what's your hair type? And I'm like, I want to write out an Excel if-then formula for like, it depends on the season, when I last washed it, what products I'm using, how I styled it. Because it's super greasy, but also pretty dry at the end sometimes, but also I'd love some volume. It's kind of thick, but fine. Anyway, Pros is made for people, not hair types. And personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. It literally has your name on it, which I think is a really special touch. When I took the Pros quiz, it asks you so many things. Where you live, to see how pollutants might affect your hair, to what you eat, what your stress levels are, so on and so forth. I mean, there's so many things that I didn't know impacted our hair health. And the way mine came out is an amazing volumizing shampoo and a purple conditioner, because I've a tendency for brassiness. And I'm obsessed with their pre-shampoo scalp scrub. You take the quiz, it assesses your hair from a variety of questions, but you can also kind of share your preferences or goals. And it'll give you a customized hair routine, wing to wing if you want it. Pre-shampoo mask, shampoo, conditioner, leave-in conditioner, hair oil, like dry shampoo, the whole gamut. And I always add on the hair oil and dry shampoo because I love them and they smell amazing. I just always felt paralyzed with options with shampoos and conditioners. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. They even have a review and refine tool, which learns from feedback and adjusts your formula if the seasons change, if you experience changes in your life. And Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/betherein5. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/betherein5. That's PROSE.com/betherein5. This episode is brought to you by Mark Fisher Footwear. In its spring-summer 2024 collection, Mark Fisher LTD redefines casual luxe for today's trend-setting, multifaceted woman. This collection seamlessly blends street style and coveted trends, elevated details, and premium materials. And their ultra-versatile silhouettes such as platforms, day-to-night sandals, and slides, day-to-night, we love day-to-night, And ballet flats go beyond mere wardrobe essentials. They infuse a sense of individuality, empowering every woman to make a statement with her personal style. I feel like sometimes I'll see people post in the Facebook group, what shoes are we wearing these days? We want to be on trend and keep up. I also don't tend to go too far outside the box with footwear. This is why I love Mark Fisher, because they always have like just landed trending styles and silhouettes. Their design team is always ahead of the curve to provide wardrobe additions to work into your rotation that make me feel relevant to street style, but not the trends that come and go so fast you'll only be wearing them one season. All my Mark Fisher footwear pieces honestly have stood the test of time multiple seasons. I recently got the Augusta. They're like a black double buckle, like semi-platform shoe with little studs on it that are like the most adorable sandal. And since ballerina flats are back, I got like a Mary Jane style black ballerina flat called the Espina. And they also have one in like a goldy silver too I'm interested in. Londe, it's like a very delicate kitten heel sandal that'll look like so cute with baggy, slightly cuffed jeans. But they have like so many cute sizes of sandals and espadrilles, slingbacks, flats. Ugh, I'm like foaming at the mouth. I'm so excited that flats are back. They have festival-ready Western boots, ultra-comfy footbed sandals, on-trend slingbacks to round out your wardrobe this season. So for understated luxury at its best this spring, shop the must-have pairs of the season and receive 20% off your purchase with code BETHEREIN5 at markfisherfootwear.com. That's MARCFISHER footwear.com for 20% off with code BETHEREIN5. All right, everybody, please join me in welcoming Cassie Ho, the personality behind fitness YouTube channel Blogilates, best known for her workout videos, which have amassed more than 1 billion views on YouTube casual. And she's expanded this into a multi-million dollar entrepreneurial portfolio that includes her PopFlex activewear brand, and her Blogilates products are sold nationwide at Target, among other things. I mean, she's been on the covers, not just featured, in covers of Women's Health, Shape, matches over 9 million subscribers on YouTube, 2.5 million followers on Instagram, 3.5 million on TikTok, and I'm obviously one of them, and I'm honored she's here today. Please welcome Cassie to the Be There in 5 podcast.
Yay. Hi, Kate. I am so excited to be here. I've been a longtime listener of the pod, and I'm just obsessed with your mind and the way that you think.
Well, that's so nice. It's funny. This is kind of a combination under the influencer episode and like a Bethson show, because when I found out you were a listener, I mean, you're so many more interesting things about you than being a podcast listener. But I was like, oh my gosh, I have to get you on this show, because A, you understand the format, and I always appreciate when people do. And I've been aware of you, and I think I started watching your videos in like 2016 or 2017 before my wedding. And it's just really cool to be able to make these connections like 6 years later.
Wait, I had no idea. That's so crazy. Oh my gosh.
Well, because the origin of Blogilates was like a series called Pop Pilates, right? On YouTube, mm-hmm. that kind of merged pop music with Pilates.
Exactly. That's what it was. I started teaching back in the day. And then in 2009, I uploaded my first YouTube video for my students in real life. And there really wasn't anything out there like Pop Pilates at the time, just Pilates to pop music. Before it was like Pilates to classical music or no music. And so I did that, and I thought it was going to be for the 40 people in my class. And then thousands of people started watching from all over the world, and they kept asking for different versions of the workout, a butt version, an ab version, an arm version. And that's how Blogilates started on YouTube back in the day.
2009. I mean, you're very early into this realm of influence before we had the term influencer, before you could make money doing it.
Yeah, it was so different back then, because I think a lot of the people starting back then were kind of just doing it to meet other people, putting things into the void and hoping you'd find people with common things that we have in common. And the culture was so different. And I do talk about this a lot of time with my friends, just the intention of being a quote unquote influencer, creator, whatever you want to call it, has so changed over the years and has changed just the type of internet culture, starting with being so weird and like, you just feel like you're in a special space. And then as more and more people join, it becomes more dramatic, more divisive, and it just loses the touch. It's kind of like how TikTok started back in the pandemic mm-hmm. times, how everything was still quirky and cute. And then it quickly went through the cycles of social media and got to the drama stage real quick.
I know. Yeah. I think that's something I think about a lot as a creator, like, what is that tipping point where you go from a niche, supportive, insular audience that's quite like-minded, and you know you want to be successful, but at what point Does that success come at the cost of more strangers and more passersby that treat you much more harshly and less like a human? And I think it can differ platform to platform.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have been through every life cycle of this phase on every single platform, and it really mimics itself every single time. But, you know, it begins with finding people who are like you, and it's super cute. We all trust each other. And then as you get bigger and as more eyes are on you who may not necessarily like you, they might, I just learned about this like a year and a half ago, hate follow you, waiting for the moment that you screw up to really just jump on you. Kind of feels like it's come out of nowhere, but they've been the ones following, not liking, and things like that. And so, yeah, there was a point in 2016, 17, 18 when I got really afraid to write anything. And I used to blog every single day. It really was my diary, my, you know, therapy essentially. And then people just started criticizing everything from the way I ate to how my body looked or how certain parts of my body squished when I did a crunch, like everything. And then I was just so afraid to say anything anymore. And I lost my backbone in 2018 and really thought I wasn't meant to be doing any of this.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, there was like a whole thing. Like, you know, being in the fitness industry, well, first of all, I started in 2009. Uploading my first video, thinking that I was just a Pilates instructor teaching workouts, and then quickly learned that my body was supposed to be my billboard. And if I didn't look like, if I didn't have a bubble butt, which I don't, I have a very flat butt, if I didn't have super flat abs with a six pack, which I don't, all of a sudden it becomes, oh, your workout routines don't work and all this kind of stuff, regardless of what my genetics are or anything. And then when I got really lean, then all of a sudden I was leaving people behind and I wasn't being authentic anymore. And then if I gained weight, all of a sudden I was too fat. Like, it was never enough, which, as we all know, it's never enough, your body in this culture and as right. The body trends keep changing. And so anyway, in 2018, I really was like, I don't think I'm meant to be doing this. And not just like the Blogilates online portions, because there was a lot of that body tearing down, body shaming, like to the max. I even got like death threats and like all sorts of stuff. It got really, really bad. But then on the internal team, things were getting toxic too. And so I really was crumbling and told Sam, my husband, I can't do this anymore. I'm not meant to. We need to quit everything. I just want to move to Hawaii and like give up. And he was like, Cassie, just give it 30 more days. And in that moment, I was like, okay, fine, let's go. And in those 30 days, the things that needed to happen happened. People who weren't part of that spirit on the team left. And also I just began to be like, I need to do content that makes me happy and stop holding myself back. And if they don't like it, people can leave. And I went through this whole like 90-day journey I talked about on my blog a while ago. But essentially, I was going to refine myself through fitness. And in those 90 days of intentionally journaling, really paying attention to how I ate and how I felt, I transformed not just my body, but my mind in 90 days. And I swear that after those 90 days, my business started to change because my confidence started changing. And pretty much from that moment on to now, like, I've only just gotten more confident because I'm doing exactly what I love, but it went through a really bad time period.
What do you think happened in those 90 days that was like, because I think that when you hear that, you're kind of like, well, I want the blueprint for that. Like, I want to overhaul my confidence and, you know, well-being in 90 days. But it's like typically not that simple, but everyone's different. What was the biggest driver of kind of that shift in mindset moving forward?
So here's the thing. I'm going to backtrack just to give it a little bit of context here. So like, I've always grown up being a little chubby and not like, you know, my body wasn't like the leanest, just how I am. And then after going on YouTube, seeing like all other types of bodies and whatever and types of fitness, I was like, oh, I really want to try to push myself and like, you know, get to this next level of physical fitness. And so in 2012, I did a bikini bodybuilding competition, which I thought was an incredible experience. It was like really just pushing myself physically to the max. However, during that period with a coach and everything, I developed an eating disorder and severe body dysmorphia and body image disorder. And I never saw myself as fit enough, thin enough, or anything. And then after I got out of that phase, which looking back now, yes, I was very lean, but during the period, I never thought I was good enough. I was so scared to even eat a banana. Like, that's how severe it got.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I went back to eating, you know, normal brown rice instead of just like egg whites and chicken. And I started to gain weight on camera. And then this was around that body positivity period. And so it was, some people welcomed it, which was good. But then some people started completely tearing me down and saying, if you cared about your body and your career, you would lose some weight. And so that became incredibly damaging. And that damage kept going on from 16, 17, 18. And then in 2019, I was like, I need to go on this journey. And so I wanted to lose all of that toxic weight off of my body. Not, you know what I'm talking about, like just from like the internal organization stuff, the outside body shaming. I just felt like I wasn't being the best version of myself. So for me, and this isn't for everyone, I like to kind of go through my emotions through fitness. And so I said, I'm going to give myself 90 days. I'm going to not follow a particular diet, but I will keep being flexible with my diet until I find the thing that works for me. I'm going to journal about how I feel, how much I slept, how much I'm drinking, water that is, and just see how my body begins to change. And so I was really intentional with how I felt. And I think really allowing myself time to focus on myself allowed those 90 days to be so special, because I really figured out what worked for my body. And it was truly transformative, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally.
It's such an interesting dynamic you describe, because I don't know if this is fair to say, but like, I think that anybody who would be at the point where they would be fitness influencing has probably been embedded in the world of fitness and health in some way. And inside that world, there is a lot of toxicity. And when people become creators and leaders and have platforms, they might not even realize a lot of the toxicity they've internalized and then shared on their massive platform until they like do some unlearning and education themselves. And it's an interesting thing to think about how, because you probably really wanted to promote like positive body image and do right by your audience, but at the same time, you're on the receiving end of body shaming that resuscitates those internalized problems, even if you've worked through them or are trying to work through them. And it must be a very confusing process of trying to lead by example, but experiencing the thing that makes our habits really fester.
Yeah. And the really confusing thing, too, is when I started to journal about this 90-day journey, I got a lot of current fans that I earned, well, I gained through the body positivity movement, saying that I was a hypocrite and that I was the worst example for women in the world because I simply wanted to lose weight. And look, I wasn't like taking pills or getting plastic surgery, which like, by the way, if you want to do that, cool for you. But I was also doing what I was preaching. And all of a sudden, I also had this exodus of people leaving me. So 2018, 2019 was really tough, but I had to know that I had to put myself first. There's always going to be people saying something from every corner of the internet. You're never going to be right, especially I've learned with fitness and nutrition. It's very like religious in a sense. And if you're not doing the thing that someone else is doing, they do want to push it down your throat. And if you're not doing it, then you're wrong.
So going even back to like pre-2009, like how did you even get into like Pilates period, fitness period? Like, is that what you always wanted to do?
No. So actually I was 16 and a sophomore in high school, and I wanted to compete in a pageant. And I know we love talking about pageants and gamma
yes,
girls here.
Of course.
So I was trying to figure out a way to get kind of to get fit for the pageant. And so I was watching an infomercial on the weekend, Mari Windsor Pilates. Do you remember those infomercials?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, I want to be graceful like them. So I begged my parents to buy me a DVD, and they bought it for me. And I literally did it in my room every single night as I prepped for the pageant. And that's how I got into Pilates, was through a fitness DVD that I found on an infomercial. And then years later in college, my friends saw me just doing this thing in the dorms, and they're like, teach me that. And I was like, okay. So I like taught a couple girls. And then I was on Craigslist. Man, I used to get lots of weird jobs on Craigslist, but this one was awesome because I saw a studio down the street from my college was seeking a Pilates instructor. And I wasn't certified, but I went ahead and did the audition anyway. And the gym owner really liked me and then asked for my cert. And I was like, yeah, about that. I don't have one. And so she ended up paying for it. And that's how I became certified in the middle of college.
So were you in college for like, what is, I feel like a lot of my friends that majored in? Like, were you in a relevant major to, like, fitness, diet, nutrition?
I mean, my parents wanted me to be a doctor. I come from a Vietnamese and Chinese background, so you're either a doctor, a lawyer, or a failure. So doctor was going to be the one for me, and I had always wanted
to be a doctor. Are those official categories?
Those are the official categories. Yep.
Oh, my God.
I'm not sure if they've changed since then. But yeah, so doctor was going to be me, but it was never in my heart. I didn't want to do it, but I did it anyway because my dad literally said, when I told him I wanted to be a fashion designer, he literally said, you're going to be poor and unsuccessful and not have any friends. And then that scared me. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll go to school for biology and go into med school. So that's what I did. But my heart was super hollow. And the only thing that really gave me joy at that time was teaching Pilates, because it got me just sort of out of that state of like, my future is going to be the hospital and I actually really suck at all of this and I don't want to do it. But doing the Pilates and the YouTube, that was never a plan. It was just something that I did because it brought me joy.
Was there a point where you were able to like overcome that pressure from your parents? Was it kind of like an ongoing thing you had to battle? Like, I honestly feel embarrassed that I'm a grown woman and I still care so much about what my parents think. And I don't think we talk enough about what a roadblock that can be.
Oh, I mean, as much as I don't want to care about what my parents think, I always feel unhappy when they don't approve of what I'm doing, which still happens to this day. But yeah, in college, it was extremely painful because I grew up a very obedient child. Like, I didn't have that rebellious teenage phase. I just never had it. And I felt like I kind of had it in college and realized, oh, I can make my own decisions. And
I showed up to a Pilates class without a certification. Like, that's
But like, so yeah, when I told my parents, I want to switch majors, I want to do this, or you will absolutely not do that. And like, it was weird, but like our types of fighting were lots of screaming and crying on the phone, and then me sending them like JSTOR articles about like, you know, the first generations of Asian Americans in the United States and career choices. Like, I don't know like what I was looking at, but like nothing got through them. And so what I eventually had to do was sabotage myself and tell them that I was really serious about like, I don't want to spend the rest of my life in a hospital. So I was, I think, a week into organic chemistry, and it was like the last class I needed to take the MCAT, and I straight up just like left. I was like, I'm not going to OCHEM anymore. And that like ruined the rest of my like track record. And that's when they realized like Cassie's really serious about this. And honestly, I feel like since that moment on, and that was a long time ago, our relationship is still pretty broken to this day because I disobeyed them.
I mean, I don't want to generalize, but is that type of pressure something cultural that you can pinpoint, that they're just like a level of expectations? Or I know you were kind of kidding with the doctor and lawyer failure piece of it, but that is interesting. And I think something that would a lot of people can probably relate to is, however unspoken or not, pressure felt, and how a lot of people get pretty far in their careers doing something they don't want to do and then kind of really late realize the impact of that pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends who have gone through the same thing. And so I do think it's a cultural thing. Also, I'm not sure if I'm using first gen and second gen correctly. I forget. But my parents immigrated from Vietnam. So I don't know if that makes me first or second. Do you know? I have no idea.
I think if your parents are immigrants, you're a first generation American.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, so anyway, here's what it is. I've learned later in life that truly all that pressure, academic pressure, even like dating pressure, like everything comes from them wanting me to be financially secure because they came from a war-torn country, came over to the United States, faced racism, didn't have money, like all that kind of stuff. So really, they just wanted a secure future for me. But it becomes really... what's the word? I don't know. You just feel like you're in a box, and this isn't my box, and you don't believe that I can be bigger than this box. And I get it. Okay. I get that you want to protect me, but the protection actually hindered me from doing what I love. However, I will say I am where I am today because of that blockage that they put in front of me that really gave me the passion and the fire to really fight for what I want. And yeah, I may not have their support, but maybe if I had their support, this would also look like a different story. And I wouldn't have, like I said, this fire, this passion you know, this protection and love for what I do, because I seriously love what I'm doing so much today.
And I mean, how cool is it to have what you've done be something that gave you a massive platform where you can now serve as an example that girls can be sending their parents instead of JSTOR articles or whatever?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, the climate and just career choices are so different. And I remember it even like several years ago when kids started saying, I want to be a YouTuber. Like, that was crazy. Yeah. And now I feel like Gen Z wants to be, Gen Alpha, whatever, wants to be some type of a content creator, influencer.
Speaking of the first and second gen terminology, I saw on like the bio of two like twin influencers whose parents were YouTubers, they call themselves second generation YouTubers. And I was like, that is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard.
Oh, me. But that's so funny. Oh my gosh. That's so interesting.
I know. Kind of. You actually did go into fashion design after college. Is that right?
Well, not like officially. I had an intern. I was supposed to have a medical internship, and I got like a fashion design internship that I found on Craigslist. See, we love Craigslist over
we
here.
Love Craigslist.
We love Craigslist. Is it still like sketch, or is it sketchier now?
Yeah. I think the last time I bought something off Craigslist, I went out to the airport to meet a guy to get a Friends box set of DVDs, like the whole seasons of Friends. And in retrospect, I'm like, why did I met a stranger by the airport to get DVDs? Like, I would never do that now.
I mean, I sold a lot of things on Craigslist. I also had like, I was in a transition phase, like probably in 2010 or something. I had this random Craigslist job where I had to make someone's sushi menu and they paid me in sushi. Like, I've done a lot of weird things. But wait, also,
that's a currency I would have accepted in 2010. Sushi's not cheap. And when you're on a budget, what are you going to do?
Right? Okay. But speaking of like meeting random people, I made friends with someone on Facebook. I invited her to come stay at my parents' house with me, having not met her before, because she wanted to come support me at my bikini bodybuilding show. Like this is what happened back in the day in 2012. Like, I would never do that now.
No, never. It really, there was kind of a misunderstanding of safety maybe back then, but for every weirdo, there's a lot of like normal gigs too. So you found a fashion internship on Craigslist.
I did.
And you had a medical one.
Yes, yes. And so in the summer, one of the summers, I had a fashion internship in San Jose. I was going back. Well, in the summers, I went back home. I'm from the Bay Area. And so, yeah, I did that. But no formal education in fashion. Like, I might have taken a summer class in fashion illustration. But everything that I do now, I've been learning on the job and from the incredible team that I've been able to hire as the business has grown. And it's so fascinating, all of it. I love it so much. And there's so many intricate things that go into garment pattern making. And like, you don't think about any of this when you're putting on clothes and asking yourself, is this cute or not? Does it make me look hot or not? But like, how something like curves to the shape of your body and like how to make that happen. It's architecture, it's science, it's math, and it's artistry all in one. And I love all the problems that we have. Like, yeah, some of them are really annoying, especially with all the different types of sizes. But like, it's been really cool to figure it out. And literally every day I feel like we have a new problem, but it's just fun. I feel like problem solving makes me really creative.
That's one of my favorite things about you and your social media platforms is how like you show how the sausage gets made. Like, you really dive into the product development piece of your activewear brand or apparel brand, Popflex. I'm wearing it. I don't know if you can tell.
I see. You're wearing the shimmer one. Thank you. I saw that right away.
I love, love, love your products.
Thank you.
And I've learned a lot about how, like, the supply chain and how the whole process works from watching you. And even, I think what I was getting at earlier is, didn't something happen where you designed a bag that ended up in a magazine and you kind of retroactively had to establish a manufacturing process?
As I was teaching Pilates in college, I had this issue where I couldn't carry my yoga mat, my bottle, my towel, my shoes, everything in a super cute bag. So I'd be fumbling with everything to class. And so I went to the downtown LA like fabric market, bought some stuff, closed out fabrics, and just made a really cute bag with a huge bow and gold chains, like my glam style. And I brought it to class and people were like, oh my God, what's that? Like, I want that. And so I only made like a tiny, tiny number of units. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was like browsing through the yellow pages, See, this is how old, this is how long ago it's been. Literally went through the Yellow Pages looking for anything that said sewing. Like, I didn't even know what this was. I just knew I needed someone to help me sew. And then I found this tiny, tiny factory in Oakland where on top it was a laundromat. And on the bottom there was like a garment factory, like a teeny tiny one. And the guy was so kind enough to be like, okay, fine, I guess I'll help you. And so that's how it started. And I was like, okay, well, we're going to have to do our own PR. Why don't I send out a couple bags to some magazines like Shape, Fitness, Women's Health, and things like that. And I just looked, I forget if it's like the front page or like the very back page of the magazine, but whatever it said there, I just mailed it. And I didn't hear from them. And then like, I feel like it was like a year later or something, I was actually working corporate, trying to be a buyer because that was the closest job I could get. This is my first job outside of college and my only corporate job. And pretty much 8 months into my job, I get a text from my sister and she's like, is this yours? And it looks like it's a picture of that bag that I made in a magazine. I'm like, what is it? So I took an early lunch. I went out to Target. I started flipping through Shape magazine and I couldn't find it the first time. So then I went slowly the second time with my heart beating. And then I saw it. It was like Hot Finds or whatever, like my no-name whatever bag made in like the bottom of this laundromat was in a national magazine. And I took it as my sign that I need to give myself the 100% chance to succeed or else I'll never know and I'll regret it. And that was 8 months into my job. I quit my job and I bought a ticket to China on Friday and left on Sunday. I was like, let's go. We're going to the Canton Fair. We're going to find a manufacturer. And like, I know I'm Chinese and Vietnamese, but I don't speak Chinese. So I had to get a translator. I mean, that was like a whole situation. And then I went to the fair, picked someone, and then went back to Boston. Forgot to mention that. I was in Boston at the time. And I waited. And while I waited without a job, with no money coming in, I was teaching Pilates up to 12 times a week to try to make the ends meet. But it was such a beautiful, struggling time period of my life because one, it taught me how to be a better Pilates instructor. And two, I had all these weird pockets of time to make videos and blog and things like that. Because as a fitness instructor, you really only teach at like 6 a.m., 12 p.m. and like 6 p.m. Wait, did I say that right? 6 a.m., 12 p.m. and 6 p.m. And so, yeah, it kind of is what gave me the time to figure out everything. But yeah, that's how that started.
Well, and I wanted to kind of go back to that point because a lot of people create brands by way of having a platform or an influence, but you from like the beginning were product focused and content focused, right?
Yeah. I mean, and the content was there because it was fun. I wanted to connect with people, but I never really thought that the content would be the thing selling my product. These were like two separate things. And so sometimes some people who don't know me as well, they're like, oh, so you became a content creator and then now you built this community and then you're able to push product on your people. Like, it wasn't like that. It was two things happening at the same time, but I've always wanted to be a fashion designer and I have loved product development from the very beginning.
So when your YouTube started to grow, I always like to ask people, did you have a moment where you were like, oh my God, I made it, or pinch me, or like a particular interaction, or get invited to something that you were like, this is so fucking cool? Even if it was like 2012 cool or whatever.
Oh, 2012 was a year. Okay, we had Carly Rae Jepsen. It was a Gangnam Style. Like, it was a year. It was truly a year. Okay, so I think it was like 2010 or 11 or something. I was on Facebook. This is when Facebook was still cool. People were commenting like, hey, can we get a Blogilates shirt? And I was just like, why would you want my screen name on a shirt? That is so weird.
My screen name.
Right? And then like in that moment, I was like, oh, is this a brand or something? I don't know. So I went to Forever 21, bought like a cheap ribbed shirt. And then we had a little design contest for the community. And eventually like everyone voted on this one design. And I screen printed it on this ribbed shirt. And then I put it up on Facebook and it sold out within like minutes. And I was like, oh, so this is a thing. And so I think that was the first moment that I realized Blogilates was a brand. And then speaking of 2012 cool, this was so cool. YouTube reached out and asked if I wanted to go to the 2012 Olympics and just stay there for 6 weeks. And I was like, excuse me?
What?
Yes. I know. They were like,
London Olympics?
Yes. It was the London Olympics.
One of the best opening ceremonies I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh. And so yeah, I spent 6 weeks in London with other YouTubers, and it was so amazing. And I never got the chance to study abroad, so I felt like it was kind of that, and it was great. So that was cool.
What do they have you doing in London for 6 weeks?
They just wanted us to make content. They like put us up in this place that was like kind of apartment-y, kind of dormy. And then they just said, go around and make content. I was very different than the other creators because they were like, you know, making vlogs and like things that made sense. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll go like buy a fascinator and like plop my tripod. Yeah, no, literally plop my tripod in front of Buckingham Palace with my fascinator in booty shorts. And I just like filmed myself and like this half moon of people like surrounded me. And then after I finished, which is so awkward, by the way, to like pretend like no one's there, they like clapped for me at the end.
Oh my God.
It was so weird. So yeah, that's what I did.
There's got to be people out there that were on their study abroad trip or spring break and they have like footage of the guards and then pan to you being like outside of Buckingham Palace. That, I mean, that's the thing about content creation. You do have to have a level of, you just can't. You have to do things like talking to yourself on a camera in public and just be okay with it.
Yeah. I mean, just talk about like the tube girl trend. You've seen her, I'm sure, right?
I mean, the Queen of London, as we know it now.
The Queen of London. Yeah. I mean, you know what's so different? I feel like, okay, we've been through the phase of people who have shamed creators and influencers for like being so into themselves in public and like whatever, vlogging, whatever. But then comes Tube Girl and she's so confident that you're like, yeah, I want that energy too. And so it kind of like pendulum swings from like one thing to the other.
Oh, absolutely. I think Tube Girl is kind of transformational in me seeing comment sections switch from like, this is delusional, how embarrassing, to like, yeah, yes, queen. Like, you know,
exactly.
Only dream of being able to do this in public. And I appreciate that because influencers in the wild kind of created this toxicity around content creation where it should be seen as like fundamentally embarrassing and delusional. There's a multi-billion dollar creator economy that exists. But okay, so going back to like, as you were growing through like the process of getting more followers and more popularity and doing fitness videos. Like, I can only speak for myself, but the past like 10 years, especially for me, I feel like the way that I've thought about fitness, diet, health, my body, everything is like rapidly changing as much as my body is. Like, I almost feel like ideologically, I'm constantly going through an evolution as it relates to like my appearance. And do you feel like in the past, you know, decade or so, like, have you felt any one way about like millennial diet culture or like the messaging we grew up internalizing and how that affected you? Have you felt like you've had to unlearn anything about the way you perceive like the field you're in? I know that's kind of a broad question.
It's exhausting, right? Like, we've been through so many different body trends, and like, I feel like women are always trying to just be that trend, right? Like, so in the 90s, being super, super thin. And then come the 2018s, like specifically, really, really big butt because of the Kardashians and super, super skinny, tiny waist with all those waist trainer things and those diet tees. Like, it just keeps fluctuating.
Waist trainers.
Oh, God. My God. Like, it's crazy because our bodies are not supposed to be treated like fast fashion, and yet we still do, and we still buy into these things that we hope are going to let us be that perfect ideal of a woman's body. And we keep changing our standards and expectations of ourselves as these like societal beauty standards keep changing. It's like so obvious that it's happening, but we still succumb to it. And so And this is also because we've grown up with these magazines and these women who are just like perfect hourglass shape with like slight abs on the front. Yeah, I grew up like wanting to be that. I grew up like dieting and going to forums, like trying to figure it out before I even understood. And then I've been through the MyFitnessPal phase, like literally writing down every calorie that I'm eating. And like finally now, look, I've always said this too, like your fitness journey and your body journey really won't last a long time if it's always going to be about the vanity. Because like anytime I went into just a purely physical journey, like I did in 2012 for that bodybuilding competition, I would be so depressed if I stepped on the scale and my weight didn't go down that day. And my coach would also be mad at me, like, well, what did you eat? Like a carb? Like, it was like really, really terrible. Yeah. And so it has taken years to get out of that and like finally, like, I'm not logging my food in an unhealthy way. And I eat because I'm hungry, and then I stop when I'm full, which people have always said that, but you never really understand that when you are in such a caloric deficit for so many years that your body is damaged. And then when you get out of it, your body soaks in every single calorie. So you also like gain weight really fast. And I was gaining weight on camera really fast. So that was like a whole nother body shaming situation. And then I also got into like not knowing when I was full, and sometimes just staring to the fridge and just like eating, and like not like my stomach would hurt, and I couldn't stop because I was just so mentally hungry. And what actually changed me was when I was listening to this Hidden Brain podcast. Do you listen to Hidden Brain?
I have before, yeah.
Okay, there was this one episode where Shankar was talking about how they had this study where they gave one group something that they called like this super fatty milkshake, and they gave another group this diet milkshake. But the thing was, they were actually the same milkshake, but afterwards, the participants that had were told they were having the fatty milkshake didn't finish it because they felt like they were full. And then the ones who were told they were having a diet milkshake were still hungry. Mm. And so that's when I realized in my mind, like all of this obsession over food and calories, it really is mental. And so it has taken a long time to break out of that cycle, but I'm healthy now, and I don't count calories, and I'm happy generally with the way that I look. But the thing is, too, I think what really transformed it is shifting my focus from my body and things people saying about my body to my work. And like that has put my mind in a different place. And I find so much satisfaction out of creation. And I'm just a lot more happier now.
Yeah, where you get your worth, I think, is part
of that's what it is. That's what it is.
Evolution is like when you get your worth from your appearance and the, you know, the way you should look, like the standards for your appearance are like a moving target.
Yep.
It's impossible to be satisfied, because even if you get close to the point of meeting that standard, it's just going to shapeshift over time and leave you mm-hmm. back at square one. This is how mm-hmm. we con women into believing that their value is in constant self-improvement. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you sharing what you went through with, you know, the bikini and bodybuilding competition, because I think like it's at that time too, like I don't think until recent years it really even occurred to me that there was no like right and wrong, good and bad. It was kind of like a conditioning of like the right thing to do is to be in a calorie deficit. If you eat or indulge in something, it's quote unquote bad behavior. You know, like I never really rose above the moralizing and coding of like eating habits to just see them as what they were. And I think what you were saying with like eating, you know, stopping when you're full, with the kind of the intuitive eating, body neutrality, like a lot of these ideologies have been really freeing. And I pray that they also aren't trends. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's so hard because do you remember the I think this was during the pandemic. I forget her name, but she made like that salmon rice thing.
Emily Mariko?
Yeah. And then I started getting TikToks saying like, oh, the reason why she's blowing up, and look, there's a million reasons why she's blowing up. Like that thing looks absolutely amazing. But people were saying people love seeing a thin woman being able to eat. And the really crazy thing is that like when you're not a super thin woman and you are just eating whatever, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're not taking care of yourself. But when you're a thin woman, you're able to eat a ton. And you kind of see this in like those mukbangs where the really, really popular ones are the very thin women with a beautiful lipstick and everything looks perfect, but they're still eating so much. Like it's like kind of weird to watch it. It's kind of like that dynamic. And it's always like, you will never be enough. And the thing that people want you to be is the thing that is the hardest thing to achieve. Like they don't like, even for me, like when I was on my 90-day journey, trying to eat the right things and losing weight, it was bad because I was trying to lose weight, period. Like, it's just like, you can never be enough. But then if I just ate whatever I wanted, like in that period of my life, I wouldn't be able to get to what I wanted to get to. And it's kind of like in the Barbie movie where America Ferrera was like, you can't.
Yes.
What did she say? Something about like, you can't want to be skinny, but you have to be skinny. Something
right.
like that.
I was thinking a lot when I was writing my book about how those things were like reinforced subtly, just in terms of like thinking back on my life when somebody's like, you look great. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why was that mm-hmm. probably happening? You know, it was mm-hmm. probably because I was thinner, and kind of just like how much head space, how much brain power was wasted. Like all the conversations I remember having in college, like we're surrounded like being hungry, what we were eating, making excuses for what we were eating, why we didn't get dressing on the side. And I never had an eating disorder, but that doesn't mean it was, just because it wasn't clinical doesn't mean it was healthy. It was still like very disordered. And I think it's hard for me to even like talk. I don't talk about it on my podcast a lot because it's hard to talk through responsibly. Because to your point, I think the way people interpret these conversations is completely individualized. You want to be able to talk about your experience without somebody comparing themselves to it is challenging, you know, to like be inclusive in the way it's spoken about. And all the while, I think there's something really weird and performative about how we think we're evolved. But then to your point about Emily Mariko, it's like if the reason this has engagement that is unspoken is people love to see a thin woman eating, like have we even changed at all? And it's just a mind fuck in general that I'm not, that's not a direct question I'm asking, but I just think about these things all the time and how, like, is what we're saying we believe really the thing we believe, or is that what we're performing online?
Oh, I think there's always a level of this performative thing. Like, even with like fashion and shopping, right? Like, we all say we want to buy sustainably, but then why do Shein sales keep skyrocketing? Like, it's not the same thing that's happening.
This episode is brought to you by Dreamland Baby, where you can go to Dreamland Baby Co. and enter my code BETHERE5 at checkout to receive 20% off site-wide plus free shipping. And this offers for new and existing customers, by the way. But let me tell you why I love Dreamland Baby, and specifically the product that Teddy's been using right now, which is their Dreamland Sleep Sack. And before this, he tried the Transition Swaddle. The Sleep Sack doesn't have arms, and the Transition Swaddle does. They're both fantastic. And they have a tagless design to avoid irritation, two-way zippers for easy diaper changes, and something called Cover Calm technology that evenly distributes the weight from their shoulders to toes. That's exclusive to Dreamland Baby products. I'm obsessed with this product and think it's like the perfect transition item when you have a baby that's going from like swaddles or thicker sleep suits to wanting them to be able just to wear like a normal sleep sack, but they keep waking themselves up, whether they still have their moral reflex or don't quite have rolling down yet, like my son. And you feel a little nervous at night allowing them to have a complete free-for-all. Dreamland Baby's founder started the company in 2018 when her son was 6 months old and waking up every hour and a half and was completely exhausted. She had an aha moment that he needed a wearable, lightly weighted sleep solution. And they made a deal on Shark Tank. They've been featured in Forbes, are sold in top retailers like Target and Nordstrom, and they've helped over 500,000 families get more sleep. And I know this is such like a finicky category that I wouldn't tell you that this product works for us unless it did. Even though I know every baby's different, just if you want an option to help any of your little ones that are in a transitional phase. And as somebody who relates to liking this sensation, their sleep sacks kind of mimic the feeling of a parent's touch or hug, and the gentle weight relaxes and calms baby, and in our case, helped him sleep better and for longer stretches of time. He gets excited when we put it on. It's kind of like signals that he's going to sleep, and he just passes right on out. And for him, it's been a godsend. And Teddy's such a star because if you go to my Instagram at Kate Kennedy, you'll see him organically wearing this in the wild, not an ad. But the first time he said mama on the monitor, and I was like, what a boss babe, what a boss baby that he's doing something so adorable and wearing one of my advertisers. What a supportive king. Anyway, if you want to give Dreamland Baby a try, go to dreamlandbabyco.com and enter my code BETHERE5 at checkout to receive 20% off site-wide plus free shipping. This offer is for new and existing customers. dreamlandbabyco.com, enter code BETHERE5 for 20% off site-wide.
That brings me to, okay, so the development of your brand, PopFlex, get started.
Okay, so it first started in 2014 as Body Pop. I was doing a lot of Blogilates products like Train Insane and Remain the Same shirts. Do you remember those motivational tanks from like the early 2010s?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, Train Like a Beast,
it was
Look Like a Beauty.
It was almost like hustle culture, fitness edition.
Yeah, in like bright pink and neon green. Like it was crazy with like words on the rollover butt, like all of that. I was making a ton of those like silk screening stuff. And then it got really, really popular. And like my timer bottles that would tell you like how much to drink like in a certain like amount of times, so that would motivate you to be more hydrated. And what ended up happening was a lot of small brands on Etsy and eventually a big department store ended up copying the designs and actually affected the business. Like my sales went down and I was like, okay, I need to do something else. And also what I've always been wanting to do. And around this time, Lululemon was getting just getting really big. And so I was like, I want to do something like that. And so I dove into trying to understand how to do real garments. And in 2014, I started trying with that. And it was received with a lot of backlash because the price points were too high for the audience. And a lot of people didn't even know what Lulu was at that point. Like, why were you charging so much? Why are you going from like $19 Train Insane shirts to now like this $45 tank top? And yeah. And people were like, you're leaving us behind. You don't remember the people that helped build you up, like all this kind of stuff. And got a lot of backlash, but also the stuff wasn't that great at the time because I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just trying to do the thing. I thought it was cute, but the quality wasn't great. And so anyway, I ended up rebranding because I found out that this Korean company, around the same time that Body Pop launched, got a trademark for the word Body Pop in specifically Pilates clothing.
Wow.
Which made me feel like someone was watching whatever. And instead of fighting that, because at this point I was like a nothing, I was like, okay, we're just going to rebrand and call it Pop Flex. And that was 2016. And so I relaunched with much better fabrics. And at that time, it did really well. But what we didn't have was an expansive size range. And so I got some initial feedback about like, hey, you need to have more body inclusivity. And so I was working on that in the background, trying to understand how the body changes as it gets larger. And it was really, I didn't go to technical design school. I didn't know any of this. And so it took me so long to launch these collections, like sometimes a year and a half between each one. And I kept screwing up. Like things were either too big or too small, or like it didn't cup the boob perfectly. And honestly, in 2018, not only were sales slumping because trust in the brand was not there because I couldn't get it right, but then again, like I said, there was that internal toxicity in the organization and then the body shaming outside on top of that. That's why I was crumbling so hard in 2018. And then that's when Sam said, give it another 30 days. And in those 30 days, some magical things happened. Like I was able to find a new manufacturer who was willing to take on some of my designs and help me develop these patterns that would be, I mean, be better for a woman's body. And that's how things started changing. And so it was really a magical time in the struggle period.
When you say toxicity in the organization, you just have been working with people for too long that weren't the vibe?
Well, so the org was very small. It was me and my husband and probably like three or four other people. And it was a lot of ungrateful people and people that had been formerly fans and who I thought was a good place to hire from, which I think does work for some people when it's the right person. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to a YouTube summit and John Green did a whole speech about how to hire. And he said, hire from your fan base because you don't have to explain the mission and like all that kind of stuff. And like in theory, that's like fantastic. And so I did that. And initially, it's like all great. But then here's the thing. Like there's like YouTube Cassie, who's very bubbly and excited and like, hey, guys, just 10 more. And then there's Business Cassie, and she's very businessy and serious. And I think this created a really weird dynamic in the office. And this was a physical office where people just thought I was mad at them or like I like what I was saying wasn't actually what I meant. And it was just like really weird. It got to a point where, you know, I would walk into the room and then all the chatter would stop. So that's when you know like something weird is going on.
Yeah.
It got to a point where I would walk in and my heart would irregularly beat and I couldn't breathe quite right. And then it got to a point where I had a full-on panic attack and it was just not the right energy. And I know now that it's not that – and during this point – I was like, I'm not cut out to be doing this. I'm not supposed to be a CEO. I'm not supposed to be a fashion designer. I really not supposed to be a creator. I just suck at everything. But the thing is, when you don't surround yourself with the right energy, no, like it's never going to work out. So that's kind of what was happening with the toxicity in 2018.
I totally understand that. I think that you could be like the biggest creator in the world and have all this fanfare, but if you're in your immediate life in circle, if people seem disapproving or de-energized or lack interest, that's your world. That's your reality. Mm-hmm. And it becomes really hard to maintain energy for what you're doing and confidence in yourself. And yeah, I've had to learn the hard way many times, like the people you work with are literally everything. And there, to John Green's point, like there's a ton of value in people that just get it. But yeah, there's a fine line when I'm sure people are like, oh, this would be so fun to work for this brand. But it's like, well, at the end of the day, work is work. And a lot of it isn't fun and glamorous. And a lot of it is hard conversations. And that becomes challenging for you, I'm sure, when you want to be the person they want you to be. But there's more to it than that.
Yeah. And like, I'm so lucky now, and I've learned so much about how to hire and how to like kind of spot a red flag early. And I could not imagine that what I have today is possible, because I think it's around that like 5 to 6 like person organization where things can, if it's not right, it's wrong. And that's where we were in 2018. And now that we have 24 full-time people, everyone knows when something isn't right. And so the culture has been established. But at the 5 to 6 person range, where two of us are husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend, like, we're still figuring out what this culture is. And so I feel like that is definitely one of the hardest kind of like just humps to get over when you're trying to figure out what your culture is supposed to be. And like, this isn't a friend group. And look, even working with friends and family, that's like a whole nother dynamic. It's just hard. It's hard. You have to find the people that believe in your mission and like actually enjoy what they're doing too, you know, and feel like they're impacting people. Because it has to be more, obviously, than just the work that you're doing every day. It's about creating something together and being really proud of it. And we didn't have that back in the day. Now we do.
Well, and I feel like too, with your, you know, you have products in Target, you have like protein powders and bars and stuff. And something that I always look for whenever, you know, there's a brand that kind of goes into the nutrition space is having like registered dietitians on board. Mm-hmm. And what you have in Blogilates or your parent company, one of your employees is a registered dietitian, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's important that I am surrounding myself with people who know more than me. That is really obviously like how the business grows. And like, I'm so proud of our technical design team, for example, and a lot of them come from Spanx, which is so cool because I know the Spanx ladies, they care about performance and fit like it's a science. And so I'm able to learn from them so much every single day. And honestly, sometimes I'm there and just like asking questions like a student, and I love it so much.
Yeah, I think that's like the most important thing is like, you are the head, but bringing in people that are subject matter experts, it elevates things to a different level. And that's really interesting about Spanx, because one of the things I love about PopFlex is you have a very like transparent product development process. And a lot of what you do is solicit feedback on designs before they're made. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really smart to kind of troubleshoot a product early in its life cycle, because by the time from you designing it to being in customers' hands, it's probably like, 9 to 12 months. But if you can kind of troubleshoot early on. So tell people about what you do with your design process and how you show them on Instagram.
Yeah. So, okay, first of all, 9 to 12 is like the short one. And we've had some products that have been like 2.5 years, like our super
really?
Bra.
Really? Wow.
Boobs are just hard. Boobs are just really hard. Yeah. So, but essentially, yeah, right. I mean, I'm an A cup, so everything kind of fits me. But like, we've learned that there are so many types of cups and boobs and all sorts of things. And so, anyway, let me get into it. But pretty much, on my IG videos, on my TikTok videos, my YouTube shorts, essentially I will take the viewer through my entire design brain. Like, hey, I had this issue. My leggings are giving me camel toe. Like, what if I remove this front seam? And kind of show them how we did that from the moment of the sketch all the way to it being on my body and it being on the website. And when I first started doing these, I was transitioning from the long form fitness videos. So that I'm talking like 10, 20, 30 minute horizontal videos on YouTube. And then me like emotionally breaking down and be like, I don't want to do this anymore because I'm no longer challenged. Like, and plus the body shaming, I just didn't want to do it anymore. And so I said, I want to show people the other like 97% of what I do throughout the day, which is product development and designing. And I am so incredibly fortunate that people wanted to watch it, because what if they didn't want to watch that content? I would be so miserable. And this is how creators burn out. You burn out when you do the thing that you don't want to be doing anymore, but the audience or whatever, the numbers keep telling you that this is what you should be doing, but your heart has completely moved on.
Yeah.
So anyway, I started doing the vertical 60-second videos, and not only did people like them and they went viral, but it started selling product. Like, it was insane. Sometimes some of these videos would bring over like 600,000 clicks to my website in one day. Wow. Like that was when TikTok was making things go crazy viral. Yeah. And it honestly brought the joy of editing back into my life. And here's something most people don't know. One of those little videos, first of all, I film everything myself and VO edit everything myself because I feel like every time I talk about these designs, it's like I'm introducing a new baby into the world. So like I want to talk about her. And yeah. So one of those videos takes me like 9 hours for a 60-second video. Yeah. So it's a lot. Yeah. But yeah, I enjoy it right now.
They're such interesting videos because I think it's stuff people don't think about. And I feel like clothes are so personal and the way they fit you is so personal. And it's, I don't know, they help me like understand why I don't like certain things, why I go after certain things. I think there's some videos about the science of camel toe are utterly fascinating because it is a problem with like really expensive yoga pants and moving out of a tunic culture into a crop top or a sports bra and ratchet set one. I'm just like, I for a long time felt like, how are other people not plagued by this? But certain things do pull a certain way. And I also, your videos about like, okay, you sent me a hoodie, like a zip up hoodie, like 2 years ago, maybe. And I put it on and I don't think I was as familiar with your product videos at the time. And I was like, why is this the best hoodie I've ever put on my body? Like, why does this look so cute on me? And I at the time was not a person that wore sweats. And I was watching your videos and you just explaining like, well, the triangular shape or where the seam goes on the shoulder or the, you know, volume of the sleeve versus the volume of the, and I was just like, oh, this almost helps me put a vocabulary to like what I'm looking for in clothes and not feeling so like angry about all the things that don't look cute or fit me well. Because I think the thing with baggy is it is hard to feel comfortable in baggy and clothing and feel like it still like maintains a shape or a figure to your liking, but is also comfortable. And I feel like you've mastered that with your sweats.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. And I am normally not a sweats person either, but like given the pandemic and how we all work at home, we'd have to look cute and comfortable at the same time. And I love the space that PopFlex has grown into because not only is it just, activewear, but from here, I've taken that performance architectural mentality with the garments and like put it into casual wear, into athleisure and sweats and like, you know, doing our first ever jumpsuit, which I saw you in the other day. You looked so cute in it. And it's just been fun. But thank you for saying that. And I agree. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone talk about the technical pattern, kind of pattern making technical design side of clothes before. But it's something that I always just kind of paid attention to as I grew up because I love clothes. I kind of collect clothes. Like, I just love clothes so much. And so I'm just glad other people like hearing about it too. Like it fascinates me. And that's why I love working with the technical designers because they teach me so much. And then back to that camel toe thing, because I used to film a ton of fitness videos with leggings with front seams. I tried so hard to get rid of camel toe in every squat or lunge or whatever. And sometimes I would like try to put like a panty liner like in my underwear. It was never enough. Nothing really worked. And I was always like kind of adjusting my pants. It just always went up. So for me, it was like a real, real issue on like a everyone can see it level.
Oh, I feel like a universal female experience is probably like looking on Amazon just to like see if there's a product that like serves as a camel toe blocker or patch or like think you can. I've definitely like had a jumpsuit or something ride up being like, I want to wear this, but I just can't risk the ride up. And like there aren't really products that help prevent it. And Khloe Kardashian is one of the first ambassadors to talk about it openly because I think it affects you depending on like, yeah, the shape of your body. But yeah, filming in yoga pants constantly, I'm sure that was a huge source of contention. And then I'm sure it was something you didn't notice at the time. And then you had all the footage filmed. And then you had to edit it back and you were like, great.
Oh my God. Oh my God. The way I would have to like crop into my face at certain points because the camel toe was camel toeing hard. Like, yeah.
No, I think the other part of the product videos that I think is cool is I think people start to grow disengaged or disenchanted with creators when it's like they're putting stuff out in the world and it doesn't seem like it's really created with the end user in mind or the feedback's not considered and they're just being pushed product upon without feeling like a part of it. And you really make people feel like a part of it. You'll be like, okay, we made this hoodie. I hear you. You want it longer or, you know, and I really like that part of it. Do you learn a lot from the comments?
Oh, so much. I learned so much from the comments. They do drive some of the new ideas that are coming out. Like, for example, like you said, the longer hoodie. I personally like when my hoodies crop above my butt because it makes me look cute. But some people are like, I want to be in a hoodie that's like so baggy you can't see anything. And so we made a longer one and we've done a lot of things to accommodate people. And the number one goal at PopFlex is to be the best in fit for women. So how are we going to do that? By having options. And these options and these ideas are coming from our audience directly. And that's why a lot of times I'll start off a video with real screenshots of real women asking for things. And like that is literally the comment that we're starting off with. Like, hey, we need to do this. So yeah, I do that all the time. And yeah, there are sometimes ideas that like don't really make sense. Like how people are like, oh, can you put a zipper at the crotch because I don't want to take off my jumpsuit when I'm peeing. I'm just like, absolutely not. Can you imagine how uncomfortable that is? Like, thank you for the creativity, but no. So you do have to filter what's going to work and what's not going to work.
Okay. I was going to tell you because I've seen you be like, oh my gosh, enough with the DMs about how do you pee? Like be a person, take it off, sit down. That's how. And when I was pregnant, I almost only wore like onesies of sorts. They were the only things that were comfortable. And I noticed my other influencer friends that were pregnant would often wear onesies. And every time one of us posted about it and linked to it, we also then had to follow up by being like, oh my God, it's not that hard to pee in it. Because for some reason you get anytime you wear anything that's one piece, you get bombarded with messages about how you pee. And it was just an interesting phenomenon to me where I'm like, I pull it down. And maybe it's because I'm at home all day and that's a luxury. And I know like going full nude in a public restroom is not ideal. But I just wanted to co-sign that like even I, when I talk about a jumpsuit, get insane amounts of DMs about peeing. And I think it's just something people really obsess over.
Wait, but like, are they like actually wondering how you pee, or are they just can't comprehend the fact that your boobs might be hanging out, which to me is fine. I don't care.
I don't really know. That's the thing I can't quite figure out. I think people feel like it sounds irritating to have to take something off the top and pull it all the way down the bottom. But I guess I just don't find it as... In public, it's unfortunate when somebody sees your boobs through the crack, sure. But I don't find it to be any more laborious than taking pants off, especially not a tight pant, like a yoga pant. I don't know.
Oh, so, I agree. Yeah. And then, or a jean, right? Like button, unzip, pull down. By that time, I've taken the shoulders off and pulled it down. It's the same thing. I think maybe these people just need to try it. Or maybe they've only been in jumpsuits that had a zipper and were like made of jeans. So it's like restrictive. But seriously, these ones are so stretchy. It probably is even faster to take off than a jean.
Well, and I don't know if this is too personal of a question, but per Spanx, like they do have a hole where you can pee. And I don't know how to pee through that without peeing on myself. So I don't really feel like they work.
Same. You know, I cannot imagine with a hole that is a certain size without getting stuff on my inner thighs. I don't pee straight. Like what? I don't know. What if I sit weird that day? I don't know. I just don't want to hold it there. I don't want
straight
it
for the life of me.
I mean, at that point, should we just have funnels? Like, I don't know.
I really don't know. I have so many memories of sitting in stalls at weddings and like party rock anthems on the loudspeaker. And I'm like, I just peed on myself and I don't know what to do about it. Like trying to use this hole.
Oh my. Yeah, no, I don't do the hole. No, no.
There is a product sold at gas stations called You Go Girl. And it is a pee funnel for like people in the great outdoors. And I've always thought it's not the worst idea I've ever seen. I guess it's not practical to carry around.
Immediately my mind goes to, what about the little drip drops? What happens to the drip drops out of the funnel?
I know.
Do you wash it in the lake? Do you have a faucet nearby? Like, I don't want to carry that germ thing.
That's
yeah.
That's a great point.
We really never stood a chance.
It's just so hard for us to pee in a sanitary fashion.
Truly.
Okay, to that jumpsuit, you sent me a few weeks ago like a long sleeve, wide leg jumpsuit that made my dreams come true because A, it came in tall.
Yes, you're always talking about how you never have leggings that fit right.
I never have, like, I have a lot of trouble with pants. Greg lovingly was like, do you want me to get you another jump? Like, do you need two? Because, like, I wear it so much that, like, I can't possibly wash it as fast as I wear it because I'm just having a lot of trouble with clothes right now and in my postpartum body. And it not only fits me, it, like, is so comfortable and it's, like, I feel modern because the pants are wide leg and I am a millennial that's had trouble migrating to wide leg. And I just can't thank you enough for that jumpsuit and sing its praises enough. Is it for sale still?
It is still for sale. It's, I think it's getting close to being sold out, but we do have some that will be reordered. But what color do you want? Let me just send you one. You have black. I know you love black, but do you want another black one or do you want like a brown one?
I don't ever wear anything that's not black. So I don't even,
I know.
I'd probably just get another black one.
It's so easy to gift you.
Well, and I love your sweatpants that have, I didn't even know this is what I needed in a sweatpant. The ones I'm wearing now, the waistband is thick. And I'm like, why aren't we? They should always be this thick. I think I love that feeling of feeling like, I don't know, tucked in and like secure.
I feel the same. And you know what? There's so many people with different opinions. And we're like, why is it so thick? Like, you know, there's always going to be everybody. Yeah. So we will be coming out with one with like a thinner waistband because, again, options for all the peeps.
That's what I think is really important. Like, I think a lot of times when people create brands, or especially in the realm of fashion, like, of course, what makes it distinct is you at the helm, it being your taste. But ultimately, it has to be demand driven. It needs to represent the audience that you're creating for. And I love that you take into account all types of bodies. You have a broad size range. And I appreciate that you're like, listen, I don't have large boobs. Like, I need to learn from people with boobs. And like, you spent forever creating this one bra, right? Just to try to like navigate the complexity of boobs. I could talk about this all day because I have such a fraught relationship with mine. But like, yeah, what was that process like?
That process is really hard. So that's the thing. The super bra took like 2.5 years to make, switching many different manufacturers and also going through many different technical designers to try to get it right. But essentially, how we were able to get it right was testing this bra on all types of boobs, like asymmetrical ones, super big ones with a smaller chest band, and then like plus size women, tiny women, like all kinds of women. And until we felt like everyone could go for a run in it and not feel like their boobs were hitting their chin. And but then at the same time, we also didn't want it to feel like armor, because I also bought competitor samples, had these same women try those on, tell us what they liked about each one. And so it was really like this deep research process. And then, of course, also trying to get our bra to be exactly what we wanted it to be. And so that took 2.5 years. I'm so glad we spent the time, because I was not going to release something with a promise that wasn't going to be delivering its promise. And like, yeah, Pawflex started out with like low cut cutesy bras because I'm an A cup and like that's what I know. But like, as our audience began to expand and ask for stuff, like I'm sad that it took me this long to do it. But now that it's here, like, we're going to improve tiny things here and there. But for the most part, like, the bulk of the product development has been done for that one. And we'll continue to expand in the larger chest, like, bra category, because, and like getting into the G cups and things like that. Like, again, like, we have different fit models coming into our fit room, and a lot of brands just have a size small and then they grade that size smaller, they grade it bigger until they get to the plus. And that's why a lot of things don't fit quite right. But we, our standard sizes that we always, always fit on is a small and a 1X. And once those feel generally like right, we also begin to test on the mediums, the 3X, the XXS, like on internal team and on fit models coming in. And the really cool thing is that a lot of these fit models are from our own community. I think they're all from our community. So I'll put out like a casting, like, hey,
oh, that's cool.
Looking for someone this height, this boob cup size, whatever. And then people will write in. And it's so fun because we're literally working with our community to make these things happen. It's just been really fun. And I'm very lucky that I have this community that is vocal, because, I mean, and here's the other thing. I've seen other brands where the community is vocal and they do nothing about it. I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, you're like such a missed opportunity. But here's the thing, like, as our business begins to grow, and I still want to make sure it's nimble and fast. And like, yes, we have to have structure as more people join the team, but I never want to lose that sense of connection, because that is the reason why we're growing so fast right now.
And it seems like you still genuinely really have fun with it, the design piece of it especially.
I do. It's like, I mean, like I said at the top of this pod, like, I always wanted to be a fashion designer, and I literally can't believe that I get to do this. And I have so much fun, and we have so many products in development, and like, I'm at every single fit. I'm at development meetings all the time, and I'm in there with the technical design team, and I honestly think it's so much fun.
And you've moved out of making fitness videos, right?
Yeah, I moved out of making fitness videos for now. I never made like an official announcement that I'm never doing it again, because I might do it again. It's just that right now I'm so focused on PopFlex and this business that I'm not doing the fitness videos. And I honestly think I need that emotional break from all those dramatic people making videos about me and tearing down my body. I just don't need that right now. And I didn't realize what a toxic industry I had been in until I stopped posting fitness videos. And all of a sudden, no one was saying something about my butt or my lower belly or my arms. And they were just saying, oh, that's really cute. And they like what I design. It really took the focus off my body. It's been so refreshing. But yeah, man, I didn't realize how bad it was until I got out of it.
Yeah, that's so tough to hear. Like, I can't imagine what it would be like being on the receiving end of that and trying to be maintain positivity for your audience while people are tearing you apart. It's such a frustrating thing that I think especially female creators go through, just being under a microscope. And meanwhile, you want people to feel good about themselves. I've never even actually had anybody in the fitness space on here in terms of under the influencer, because I actually find, I feel like it's hard to even navigate from a creator standpoint, because I do think it's an industry that can attract a lot of bad actors.
Oh, yeah. And then you also have those people who may be genetically gifted in their bubble butt or whatever, which is great. Or maybe some people who got surgery and like they're selling like a booty program. And like it's just like it's all sorts of things that you never know what goes into it. But all I know is that if you don't have that perfect body for the thing that you're trying to sell, like you're going to be bashed all day long. And I was bashed for it, even though I went into it thinking I was just teaching a class, but the fitness influencer culture became something so much more than that. You pretty much had to look like a model and look like the thing that was the subject of the YouTube fitness video. It was just really hard, like just, I guess, competing against all of that, even though I don't even want to, like, I don't like competing. Yeah, it was tough. And I really, really didn't enjoy that. I enjoyed it when it was beautiful and pure in the beginning, and then it became something else. Yeah.
Well, it's also kind of a crazy, like, catch 22 of being held to an impossible standard for how you should look inside the industry, and then outside the industry, you're criticized for promoting impossible standards.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was getting married in 2018, and I did like this cute little bridal program, like get ready for the aisle or whatever. And I got all this backlash about, like, oh, so you're telling me, like, I have to be skinny on my wedding day? And like, I wasn't, but I was also making this free program and slash I wanted to be a little bit more toned on my wedding day. Like, what's wrong with that? I mean, it's all of it. Like, you can't, like, why can't I work for it? But then working for it means you hate yourself. But like, that's not what I actually said. Like, there's always a catch 22.
This is precisely why I've never been able to like really talk about these topics on the podcast. Cause yeah, It's so confusing to navigate.
So confusing.
And you just want to be like, this is my experience, what worked for me. And also caveat that like you don't have it all figured out. I think we're always like evolving the way we feel about our bodies, our appearance, ourselves. And like, I think it's hard as with a platform to have to behave like perfectly all the time with something that's so personal that like you're going to change your mind about a lot yourself.
Yeah, and I like what you said about not having it figured out, because that's where people don't give you the grace, especially as someone who is considered an expert in the field. But like with my 90-day journey, I was blogging live every single day. So you could hear me talk about, hey, like this thing isn't kind of working for me. This is making me bloated. And people don't like to know that you don't know. Whereas like someone like a Beyonce who only revealed that she went like what, raw vegan or vegan all the way up into Coachella. And what, was there any peep of anything going on? Because you didn't see her journey, her process. And I'm allowing people to be on that journey with me, but they won't give me the grace to experiment. And so it's a hard thing. And yet at the same time, this brought so much traffic to my blog because everyone wanted to know, but then people were also criticizing. I mean, it's just, it's a lot. It's exhausting. And so I'm glad I'm not even like sharing that side of what I'm doing, because it was, I felt like I was always defending myself just for trying things.
Yeah, I know. I could see that being incredibly exhausting. And I think what's interesting for me now with like postpartum and stuff, I'm almost experiencing like, I don't know how to explain it. Like not the anger, but like, it's like I get both sides of it. Like when I see somebody that posts like, oh my God, like need to get my body back. This is me 4 days postpartum. And they're like, you would never even know they had a baby. I'm like, oh my God. You almost get frustrated because you didn't have that experience of looking almost the same. and it just feels unfair. But then it's like, well, to that person, they look different for what makes them comfortable. And they are just sharing that they are. And like, there's validity in just being like, for me, this is not, you know, what I want to look like or the way I feel most comfortable. But if you look different from them, it's hard not to compare yourself being like, I would kill to look like that. And it's just like, maybe this never belonged on the internet for this reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And yet at the same time with social media, you hope that when you reach out, you can find other people like you. And that's been the beauty right. of the internet from the beginning. So it's also sad that you can't share these personal things. Yeah, it's just hard. It's hard when people don't realize that different foods for different bodies, different everything for different bodies. We all, I mean, I feel like I repeat myself all the time, but like people just need to understand, like, and just like watch and be supportive, but like don't say that just because someone's doing something that like they're saying something bad about you. It somehow feels like very like projecting, you know?
Oh, totally. And I think that, I don't know, at least for like a lot of millennials, I think, I mean, I think part of what I love about your apparel too is if they, what is the adage? Like when we were growing up, like we had to fit in clothes, but now like our bodies had to fit in clothes, but now clothes are made to fit our bodies. And I feel like the entire mantra of PopFlex is like making clothes for real bodies.
That move with you, not against you, and that make you feel good. And yeah, I mean, I've seen so many bodies in like the jumpsuit, for example, and like seriously, everyone looks so good. I'm even like, I don't know, how did we do that? I don't know. And I don't know if you, when you turn around, if you see how cute your butt looks, like there's like a specific seam back there that kind of like does a little booty separation to make your butt look cute. I don't know if you see that.
Oh, interesting. I have not turned around and looked in a mirror
lately. You should
turn around
and look at your booty. I was going to add that in the video, but I was reaching 59 seconds. Like I can't add in this other thing about the booty thing. But like there are things that like I specifically wanted to put there just to like gently highlight and accentuate a woman's features. I just like I pay attention a lot to how I look in clothes because I think it's fun and exciting because it's like art. It's like sculpture. I just love it.
Oh, totally. If you ever want to tap into a market of busty people like the so I feel like I have an audience of people that many people found me through like talking about purity culture and stuff and like modesty and like covering up. So I have a weird relationship with boobs and I just – it's so internalized that like I just generally feel weird showing them and it just affects my mood, whatever. And I have this minimizing bra I'm obsessed with and I don't really do that many swipe ups or links for commission. Yeah. When I tell you, the number of minimizing bras I have sold on my Instagram is like shocking. Like I've never ever – like something is – I've never had more people click and buy something that than a bra that just makes your boobs look smaller. And I think that the big boobed community, like sometimes all we want is just to feel like we don't have them and they're not in the way and we can't feel them and we're not showing them off or accentuating. Like I don't have much interest in accentuating or showing that I have boobs. I just want them contained.
Wait, that's so interesting. Okay, so from an A cup person, all I want is to show that I have boobs. So give me cleavage, give me the lift, give me everything.
Yeah.
But also, okay, a minimizing bra. So what does that mean? Does it flatten?
I'll send you the link.
Like, what do you mean? Okay.
It's kind of a cult favorite amongst bustier people because it just, it somehow in like a t-shirt makes your boobs look like a little smaller when so many things are about like, you know, have additional cups or have push-up or whatever. And like, that's the last thing I want is like a quadra boob under a shirt because it like cuts into the skin by trying to push it up. And
So
speaking from our community, if you want to.
Wait.
If you ever need feedback, I could talk about this all day.
Wait, this is – okay, so literally this is the first time I've heard about that. Thank you for teaching me about this minimizing bra. I've never – it's so interesting.
I know, and I'm sure most healthy people like don't – like are comfortable like showing off their curves, but I think there's a segment of us that like – just, I don't know. Sometimes I think the way baggier clothes tent off of a big boob, too, can be a little bit frustrating. So anything I can minimize to just kind of make it more streamlined makes me more comfortable. And yeah, I'm just, I'd say 90% of the time I am not after cleavage and I'm not after showing off my boobs.
Wow. Like 100% of the time I'm trying to push my boobs up. Oh my gosh.
You'll have to ask on the office if anybody else shares the sentiment. And I'll share you the bra so you can look at it from a construction standpoint. But it's insanely popular. I don't know.
Wow. Okay. I'll look into it.
I found it.
Start working on a minimizing boob push-up, but boot bra.
Well, you have to see, and I might not be an adequate sample size, but I used a stylist one time who made me realize I had a lot of issues with like clothes in my body and, you know, just like the wearing of black and all the things. And she said like the first place the first thing she does, she takes people to Nordstrom, shows them this bra, and then magically watches them want to wear clothes again.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And thank you for letting me get in my minimizing diatribe.
What, anything else? Put in your request now.
I know, I'm like,
what else do you need?
Any other notes about what I need? But no, I so appreciate you sharing more about your journey. I mean, you've had such a long career. It was hard to cover everything. But I think the way you've traversed like industries within the same field and then kind of expanded to what you've always wanted to be doing your whole life. And I feel like that really shines through what you share and how much fun you have experimenting with design and the clothes. I mean, I like, you've sent me them, but I also buy them with my own money. Like I love, love, love your activewear. And as a non-sweats person, and this person doesn't really work out, I feel like it's a testament to how good it is that I just want to be like wearing it in general.
Thank you, Kate. That means so much to me. And like obviously I've listened to your pod for so long. I think I found you during the pandemic. And like, this is such a dream to be on your podcast and like you're wearing the clothes. Like I feel so grateful. Thank you.
Oh my gosh,
just for being a huge supporter as well. Yeah.
And I meant to ask you, like, what's next for PopFlex, if you don't mind me asking? Like, what are you trying to go into, other types of apparel? Are you trying to refine what you do best? What are you thinking?
Yeah. So this year in particular, 2023, we've gotten into new categories. So we tried swimwear at the top of the summer. And this was something people had been asking for literally like 3 years. And finally we did it. And it did so well. And so we're already working on swim 2024, and that collection will be even bigger. And then this fall we went into casual wear, and because that did well and people were asking like, well, why don't you make a pants version of that and like a dress version of that jumpsuit? And so we are working on that, and we will be heading into more categories in 2024. I'm not going to tell you yet because we're deep in development, and like things could go either way, but I'm just so excited. The whole goal, besides being the number one in fit, being the best fitting clothing brand for women, is also to dress her from day to night. And so I want the clothes to be with you all the time. And so that kind of gives you a clue into what we might be developing for next year.
I love day to night fashions. That's exciting. You just reminded me of the other request I had that I can't find. I want in this life is a black one-piece bathing suit that actually operates like shapewear. And like,
Okay. So we had a black one-piece bathing suit in our initial swim launch. Do you like cheeky or non-cheeky?
No.
Cheeky. Okay.
King of nightmares for me.
Well, you wouldn't have liked the one that I made, but it did have like a crisscross in the back so you could cinch it, and it really would like bring you in, not like shapewear status, but you could cinch it. But maybe I'll work on a shapewear like one piece that's non cheeky. Okay, wait, boot cuts or no boot cuts?
I don't need full coverage.
Okay.
I just don't have an ass meant for the public. Like I just don't want it out there. And I feel like the cheeky stuff, like I just think for a lot of butts, it is very, very hard to feel confident and comfortable. And even though we should feel whatever, it's a level of exposure I'm not used to. But I don't want to be like puritanical. I don't need like a boy short, and I don't need, you know, I just think it's hard to, my point is I can't find it. I can't find a balance of like a little cheek, but not a level of coverage that feels, I don't know.
Okay, like, and just to be specific, I know you said not full cheek coverage. Are we talking like a 3/4 cheek coverage or like a 7/8 cheek coverage?
I think my thing with bathing suits is that you almost need to overcorrect a little on coverage because as you're moving and walking, it's going to ride in.
Right.
And I feel like people make it for coverage as if it stays like that. And then it gets too cheeky. So it's almost like finding a balance of like enough fabric that if it was straight, it might look like too much. But when you're moving, it like performs well. And it's, I mean, in pageants, they have butt glue for a reason. Like these cheeky things would look good, I think, to me, if they stayed. But when they don't stay, it gives me a lot of anxiety, is I guess my point. And to your question about boob cups, I say just as long as they're removable, people can do what they like. I usually, I almost always remove padding, but I think it's good to have the option if you don't want to be nipply. So I don't know.
Oh, but what about underwire? Do we like or we don't like for this swimsuit?
I don't like underwire because it just, in something that's so form-fitting, it cuts into me too much.
Got it. Okay.
So
okay.
It's an impossible ask to have support, no wire, shapewear, little cheeky, not too much. Like I know it's high maintenance, but.
You know, I'm going to work on it because I love you and we're going to make it happen. So this might take a while
for this bathing suit.
I'm going to work on it because it sounds like a nice challenge. And, you know, I like my problems.
And it's just very hard to find form-fitting things on the stomach that, like, don't show the outline of your belly button, for example. I'm like, what is this?
Oh, don't show the outline of your belly button. Is that because the fabric's too thin? Is that all it is?
I don't know, but it's like you can see the indentation. And it's just like a pet peeve I have of – like, I wish this was more belly button blocking. Not that it matters, but
I think it's because the fabric's too thin. I think if it were thicker, it would smooth it out. That's what I'm thinking.
Maybe I'm going the wrong places to buy bathing suits, if I'm honest, because I probably wear one 2 days a year, but.
Okay. I'm going to work on this.
I'll keep your innovation. Oh my gosh. Well, Cassie, you're the best. Where can people find you and all that you do and make and are working on?
They can find me at Blogilates on pretty much every platform. And you can find all the stuff on popflexactive.com. So, yeah. And we're now on, like, TikTok shop. So I guess you could also buy it on TikTok because they've got those free coupons going on right now. So use them.
Are those legit?
So they are. And this is what I think is happening. I know. So TikTok is paying for those coupons. So when it's saying take $20 off this order, they're paying the $20. So I still get the full amount as a business.
Money.
I'm not. But here's my prediction. I think TikTok Shop coupons are going to go to the end of the holiday season. I think TikTok's trying to become the number one place for online live shopping and just kind of trying to own that category where IG couldn't figure it out. Facebook couldn't figure it out. YouTube is trying to figure it out. So I think once they dominate by paying business owners and also the affiliates, then I think they'll take the coupons away. So they are legit. I think you guys should use them, but also be careful because there's a lot of dupes on there. Here's another conversation. The new generation is calling counterfeits dupes, and it's really pissing me off.
Because you had Shein. Is it Shein?
Shein. Yeah.
They like directly will rip off stuff that you know is so specifically uniquely yours because you made it because it didn't exist in the marketplace.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything you can do about that?
So I have the design copyrighted now. I'm also working on like a design patent for it. So I am trying to do whatever I can legally. However, a lot of these businesses copying and, you know, it's being copied on Amazon now as well. They're from overseas. So what does that mean for me legally? It's going to be really hard to get into a battle for that. / do I have the money to battle this out? Like Lululemon has dupes. Free People has dupes. If they're not able to do something, how am I supposed to do anything? But with that said too, as an affiliate, I can see kind of like what sales are coming in the background on TikTok Shop. And some of the highest selling things are these, what they call LLL Athletica belt bags. It's a Lululemon, I think, fake belt bag because they're not calling it Lululemon. And it's selling for a very small amount. And then the comments will say like, I'm so happy all the logos came in the right place and things like that. So people know they're buying a counterfeit. But nothing is happening with this now. And I think in 2021, there was a lawsuit between Amazon and two influencers and some third-party sellers where they were like selling counterfeits on Amazon. Like this is going to be a whole thing. I think it's just a huge lawsuit waiting to happen. But right now, the counterfeits are rampant. So just be careful. That's all I'm going to say.
I think the thing I learned when I was in my doormat days is like you can file for all the IP you want and spend all the money. Yep. But you're the one that has to police it and you're the one that has to litigate against it and you're the one that has to waste all your time, energy, and money fighting it when you could just be using that time and energy to be the first to innovate and hope that you can build a strong enough brand and presence that people want to support your quality. And I think that's really all you can do.
No, you're absolutely
right. As frustrating as it is.
You're absolutely right. I've spent way too much money with lawyers like talking about this. And in the end, if I'm not able to police it myself and be willing to go to court and pay for the litigation, then what's the point? And some of my other friends have told me just focus on innovating. You'll always be one step ahead and just know they will be copying you, but you will be one step ahead. And honestly, I feel like I have to be okay with that. That's just the nature of fashion law and the business and the industry. It's sad, but and what's more sad is the dupe celebrating culture. I really don't like that. Yeah.
I just think that ultimately things can look the exact same, but what will set them apart is they don't perform the same. They don't fit the same. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's what will make people come back to your products, which I can attest do perform differently than the crap you can buy. Aww, on Shein or Amazon, I promise.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you for wearing this stuff. It means a lot to me.
Of course. Thank you to everybody who's still here listening. Thank you to Cassie for coming on the show for Under the Influencer. If some of the stuff was dated, like I said, it was recorded last year with intention of being the Under the Influencer for Q1. I just put it out kind of late in the game, Q1. But her story is so fascinating. I genuinely love her products, and I hope you guys will try them out. And I could talk to her about my hyper-specific needs with bathing suits and bras all the live long. Sorry you had to hear some of that. Sorry you had to hear about my journey peeing in Spanx. Well, you know, what can you do? I guess not air that information about myself. But anyway, I hope you guys have a great week, weekend. Find me at Kate Kennedy. Come back next week for another fun interview. And I'm just so grateful that you're here. Support our sponsors, Dreamland, Pros, Mark Fisher Footwear. Love all of them. You can always find sponsor codes on betherein5.com. You can shop merch, my Amazon storefront for other baby products and stuff. And also, we just announced 2 more dates for the One to Millennial book tour because I just can't help myself. I want to see more of you. And we did a survey, and so many of you were in and around Ohio and in Minneapolis. Those are the 2 days we've added so far. There were a couple others we were going to add where the numbers were like close-ish, but we couldn't get like good deals or good dates anytime soon. So if I'm not going to where you are, it's not personal, I promise. I wish I could go absolutely everywhere. But yeah, tickets go on sale 10 a.m. EST on Monday, April 1st. So if you're hearing this Sunday, that's tomorrow. And in general, even if it's after that, go to betherein5.com/live-shows. And just, yeah, maybe there's still some available. We're doing 1 show in Minneapolis, 1 show in Columbus. There was a lot of you in Columbus and Cincinnati and Cleveland, and I felt like Columbus was kind of central. So anyway, you guys, thank you for the privilege of your time. And as always, let me know your thoughts and I'll let you know mine. I'll be there in 5, I swear.